There's a whole lot of good things happening on the Podcast One Forbes network. Forbes U30 is a show about young innovators, disruptors, and entrepreneurs like the minimalists Joshua and Ryan, electropop artists like Lights, CBS Search Party star Charles Rogers, the women of YouTube's Clever TV,
plus many more.
And the Forbes interview is a deep dive into the minds of the folks who could be on the cover of the magazine, like Tinder founder Sean Rad, hero pilot Captain Sully Sullenberg, Moneyball author Michael Lewis, pop star Jason Derulo,
and the list goes on and on.
Subscribe or listen to Forbes U30 and the Forbes interview now on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or PodcastOne.com.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Spaz, otherwise known as Dr. Bruce.
Good to be here.
Filling in all week.
Where's Dr. Drew?
And doing a wonderful job for Dr. Drew, who's out because somebody dropped a nickel somewhere. All right. What are you thinking about, Dr. Spaz? Anything on your mind?
I was just thinking about that SS Camaro I rented and had a great weekend with.
Oh.
I know you don't stoop to American cars.
I just rented a Cadillac. What are you talking about?
Oh.
How dare you?
I'd like to get in a CTSV.
I like Cadillacs now, and the Camaro. I was just looking at the guy's IR5, whatever, with the we're talking about in the last one.
ZL1.
10-speed with the whatever, but the brakes were big. The engine was big. Like, everything was big. And then he said to me, you want to take it for a ride? And I said, no.
Yeah.
Because... I'm busy, but B, it's not worth it on the street. It's just no fun, especially with Burbank PD and Glendale PD. It's just wait to the track.
Yeah, well.
Let's just get on the track. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not a race car driver, so light to light, straight line, something makes a lot of noise and rumbles, good American 6.2 liter V8. The ZL1's a supercharged. All the vet people are upset because you got the same engine in a Camaro. They're all the ZL6 guys.
Guy told me it set the record at the Nürburgring. Oh, wait, say that.
Yes, Nürburgring. Yeah, not bad.
That was a five. Yeah. Yeah. It said it beat the Nissan RS whatever and the... GTR? GTR.
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
Just beat everyone. Although the Nissan GTR Nismo would be a fun car bop around in.
Yeah. 150,000 or more, right? That's the problem.
But, you know, the whole thing about these supercars is, like I told my friend Joel McHale, who's driving a turbo Porsche now, he was really going gaga over the Audi RS. But the 10, this was the V8, but the 10s were coming out. And I said, look, first off, you just have to kind of get over yourself because a new car comes out every 2 years and then your car is not as good as that. You have to kind of live with that. You know, they're always outdoing each other. But if you can wrap your mind around that, wait around for the V10s to come out, find some podiatrist in Palm Springs who's selling his V8 RS Audi and go get that thing with 21,000 miles on it. You know, you'll be driving a supercar.
Right.
And you'll get it for, you know, I don't know what the dentist paid $1.40 for it. You might get it for 89, you know.
What is Drew's got an RS
7.
7. And what's Mikhail looking at?
He's driving he was looking at an R8, but he was, which they must have called, no, they never changed it to R10, did they?
No.
Audi pissed me off because Audi had an R10 and an S10, and they're completely different vehicles. And, R8 and an S8, and they couldn't have been further apart. Yeah. And I just didn't like the idea that you were branding them that way. I would always get confused, like the R8, the S8 is the flagship. And the other one's a sports car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. BMW is the easiest to predict. I mean, now with Mercedes, I'm not sure. Everything's got AMG written on it.
Four, five, one.
They apparently did change it to R10.
You can no longer, you can't have an R8 swap out the V8 for V10. I know I sound like Lynette now. And continue to call it an R8 with a V10 in it. Just doesn't make sense, right?
Oh,
okay.
A friend that bought one of those years ago.
Brandon from Portland, trying to get pregnant.
Wait, hold the phone. Oh. They did keep it at R8.
Oh, no. What the hell?
Because the 8 is 10? The series. It's not the engine, so.
I know, but you asswipes already had an 8 series. They had an 8 series already. What the
But that's fuck. The 10 cylinder's been out for years.
Here's a possible solution.
That's not new.
Put in R10 and that. Sorry. You put in an R10, and that is the name of a Le Mans-style car that they actually race, like one of their race cars. So maybe that's maybe that's why they couldn't do it.
Hmm. All right. Let's see. What about him and his wife, huh? Hey, Brandon, 33, Portland.
Yeah, hey, Adam. How you doing? Long-time listener. You know, grew up with you, Loveline, Man Show, all that stuff.
Thank you.
Listen to Corolla Digital Possible. Corolla Digital Podcast, you know, at least once a day usually, so happy to be on.
Love that about you, Brandon. What's the question?
Yeah, so I'm 33. My wife's 3 years younger, about 30. She's very much the motherly type. Mm-hmm. I know you've talked about your wife being somewhat similar about that, wanting to be great with kids.
Yeah. Be nice and, she had a dusting of wife type in her. she's the greatest mother in the world. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, We were pregnant about a year ago, miscarriage. My wife's had kind of a tough run of it. You know, she didn't want to try again for a while, and then pretty much every other one of her friends has gotten pregnant or had a kid or another kid. And, you know, from my perspective, I'm just trying to kind of, you know, keep it going. Everything's good. It'll happen. And she's just having a tough run of it. And I know, obviously, kind of from your perspective, you guys had some things to get Sunny and Italia, and I just kind of want a psychological perspective on how to be supportive, and maybe Dr. Bruce could have a couple other insights as far as if there's anything further we should be doing medically as well.
Well, you know, you try to do what you can do the natural way for, put them on hold, for whatever period of time, and then it's time to intervene, you know, medically. Now, at 33 and 30, that's a little bit young, but if stuff's not working.
Right, but a third of fertilized eggs are naturally dissipated. They don't go on to pregnancy. So it's what I point out to patients, because you see them a lot
but
in the
ER. You wouldn't characterize that as a miscarriage, would you?
Well, a third of the time, things don't take. So sometimes they end up, you don't know that you've passed.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What percentage of it... What percentage, you're not going to have an answer, but
right.
What percentage, but no one has an answer, but the percentage, to me, miscarriage is I'm pregnant, then we miscarriage.
Right.
You not knowing you're pregnant and miscarrying is technically a miscarriage, but I wouldn't count it as a miscarriage.
Right.
So what percentage after somebody announces I'm pregnant, not to the world, to their partner, you know, some people
I don't know the percentage there, but I know a third of the time in general. So and it's a matter, first of all, I think the most important thing, Brandon sounds like he's empathic and he's not taking the mail. Oh, it's no big deal. He's sensitive.
Yeah, rub some dirt on it. Go now.
But, and then women have hormonal changes that occur, and you have postpartum depression that sometimes overlooks. So if somebody is depressed after this, it's just important that it be recognized and not tell somebody like, oh, just pull yourself up by the bootstraps, that type of an attitude. They recognize
no, he's good.
He is
She's
good.
Good. They'll be good. And it's just one of these, you know, it's just one of these things that it's like, I remember when we were trying to get pregnant and doing all the shots and doing all the rituals and everything. And it was like, oh, God, is this ever going to, how's this going to work? Is it ever going to work? What it's a pain in the ass with the shots and everything.
I had to come in and give the shots when you were gone.
Yeah. and then at some point you're pregnant, and at some point their 11th birthday, and at some point you're dead. You know what I mean?
God.
And they're dancing a jig on your grave.
I'm glad Brandon has empathy.
No, I'm just saying, it just is. Everyone remembers it. Everyone kind of goes through it. And your kid's, you know, running an internet business, and your daughter's over at college, you know, and it's like, it's you blink your eyes. It's just somehow there, you know. And it's a weird, it is a weird life cycle that almost everyone goes through, and I just don't know how else to say it other than it is. And just you be present, and you be who you are, Brandon, and she keeps. And then, but with an eye on pragmatism, which is, look, eventually if this is not working, it's time to go look at some, insemination and some stuff like that. You
right.
Know, other modalities.
Medically, there's nothing you would do at this point, unless there's some family history that would have impact related to miscarriages. But at this point, just to recognize, support her, be supportive, be encouraging, and should be fine.
Or dump her and get the new Camaro with the 10-speed.
Yeah.
Do some donuts in the parking lot.
A ZL1. Anybody wants to donate a ZL1 to my cause?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let me tell you guys about Married at First Sight. We're talking about these guys in the last episode. Mm. New episodes every Thursday, 9 o'clock, 8 central on Lifetime. New season follows Chicago singles who agree to get legally married to a stranger the moment they first meet them. I got a theory about arranged marriages, which is they go on much longer than once, because the other ones involve you and your screwed up psyche and your picker. You know what I mean? Like, you literally pick the wrong person because it's you. You're better off having someone who doesn't have a dog in a fight pick for you.
This has got to be one of the edgiest shows conceptual I've ever
heard. It's a team of experts create three compatible couples based on scientific matchmaking. They don't meet until they walk down the aisle and see each other for the first time at the altar. After several weeks, they must decide, do they remain together or do they get divorced? I love this. You can catch full episodes. The older ones you can catch up on Lifetime.com, MyLifetime.com, MyLifetime.com, or use the Lifetime app and watch episodes every Thursday, 9 o'clock, 8 central on Lifetime. All right, so Bruce.
Yes.
What are you and Drew talking about? We were talking before about this serial killer, and then the guy goes and he serial killers, and the guy's trying to map the guy's brain and finds out he has the same brain.
They had to break the you have double blind studies, you have a control group, and of course my recollection is not like the Corolla recollection perfect. But anyway, so they got a bunch of his family to be in the control group, and then he had PET scans of serial killers. And
right.
So James Fallon, who was doing the study, they came to him and said, we've got to break the blind on this and see who this is. And it was him. So he had this typical brain scan of a serial killer and yet of a sociopath.
Well, how did he get drawn into it in the first place?
He's a UCI professor that was studying this, so...
He was studying serial killing.
Right.
What were his findings with serial killing?
What were his findings? Well,
Hold on. Let's go over this again.
Okay.
Gary, you ready? Here we go. I'll reenact it doing myself. He's a professor who studies serial killers.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were his findings?
His findings?
Findings? Let's put it this way. He's a professor who studies earthworms. What were his findings? Findings? So, right,
do you want to try it again?
He's a professor that studies serial killers. What were his findings?
The findings were...
I don't know.
It's not solely dependent on brain structure, but pregnancy, your exposure to neurotransmitters in the womb and stress in the mother, and then environment. And the looking at his behavior, he had certain characteristics of somebody that was sociopathic in terms of empathy, putting other people at risk, but he never behaved in such a way that he was killing people or
no. I get he was a killer.
Well, no, but I mean,
he's a professor. He found out they had the same brain.
But he's talking about putting his brother at risk when they were hiking through caves where there was Ebola virus. And he was saying that he didn't realize that he had impulsivity and he had a sort of a tunnel vision where he didn't look at risk the way other people did. So, and then he was related to the first committer of matricide in the United States and Lizzie Borden. And so there was in his family tree.
He was connected to Lizzie Borden.
A relative, yes. And somebody named
Who was the first killer of a parent, but I mean, sort of, I don't know, modern day or something. I'm sure people did it at some point with a stick or something. I mean, who knows what folks.
But whole point is serial killing is somewhat related to, there's something in the genetics. And then there's something called epigenetics, where your environment actually influences how your genes are expressed. And that's why if a mother has stress, her brain is bathed in serotonin, it affects how the expression of the genes that may predispose somebody to serial killing or sociopathy.
So
occurs.
Lizzie Borden took an axe. She gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. I think that was it. Although I would kill Dad first. Because, you know, he's more imposing. Got to find the song, Gary. See, Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her, I think it was her mother, 40 whacks with an axe. And then when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. You guys know about Lizzie Borden? Too young for Lizzie Borden, huh? All right. Lizzie Borden was, kind of famous young person. Played in a TV movie.
It was a rock band, too. Right?
Max Babb, would you like $5,000? You can tell me who played Lizzie Borden in the movie The Week.
I could.
$5,000 Corolla dollars. Oh, my God. I'd love to see you answer that correctly.
All right. Elizabeth Montgomery.
That's the Lizzie Borden I know.
Edgy. Are they going to sing the song? Oh.
Wow. What happened to this fine music?
I always thought it was for dumb teenage guys who are struggling with their sexuality.
No, doing lines of methamphetamine.
And struggling with their sexuality?
Wow.
Starting to like this song.
Long intro, sorry.
It's okay, it's a backdrop for talking about Weekly Infusion with Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
So we had this, we had the Lizzie Borden descendant, but... Oh.
This is a band, Lizzie Borden, Gary.
What?
There's a band called Lizzie Borden. That's probably.
Oh, I was looking for the lyrics that you gave us, and this is what it came back with.
Oh.
Sorry.
What band was that? So we can get Adam that CD.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
Okay. Flotsam Jetsam, huh?
Flotsam Jetsam.
Yeah. Favorite of some of my patients 20 years ago.
Flotsam Jetsam's a weird thing, too. What is Flotsam and Jetsam?
It's like the stuff that ships leave behind, like all the stuff that's like floating around.
Right.
Oh, so, look at you.
I'm sorry, did you want another song? This song does contain the lyrics that you read
to us. Well, I wanted the lyrics today, Junior. Some point. We just got to fast forward. You'll figure it out. No, it's not even, it should just be a child's, it's a nursery rhyme.
It's sung to the then popular song, Ta-ra-ra-boom-da.
Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee.
Yes, and Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
You know what?
You got it right.
Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee, that you guys don't know either.
I have no idea what that is.
But not only spawned Lizzie Borden, but also spawned the novelty song, Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee, I'll take your pants away. And while you're standing there, I'll take your underwear. So Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee really got a lot of mileage out of that.
I know that melody.
You know that one?
You know that.
There's a 2014 TV movie that was on the Lifetime channel called Lizzie Borden Took an Axe, starring Christina Ricci.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, I think Elizabeth Montgomery was the one who made it first famous in 1974 or
75.
God, it's weird. I wanted to say 75. I don't know why. I'll pick an even number. All right. So this guy was at a distant, had a distant relative
who family was, line that had sociopathy. So the question was, now that he knows this, this is where the story gets interesting. He has to investigate further, and when he's told he has this typical brain structure, then why hasn't he developed the same behaviors that are seen in these other serial killers? And he had the, Bundy and the serial killers we've all heard of. So it's, he was talking about lectures he had done to psychiatrists, and they came back and said, well, you do have these certain characteristics, and yet the answer is in environment, in the environment in pregnancy, and
So it takes a sort of perfect storm of the environment and the nature and other things as well to create a serial killer.
Right, but there's some other aspects of this. That the epigenetics thing is if you have an environment, if you have a culture that's very violent, that mm-hmm. is also going to increase the chances of the expression of this genetics.
And culture, you say culture or the family's violent?
But either way, these things are handed down and tend to concentrate. So if you have like the ISIS type, mm-hmm. What's going on in the Middle East, when people are exposed to extremely violent behavior, it's going to increase the expression of these genes, mm-hmm. and it can increase the expression down the line. It's just really sort of scary stuff when you look
at. I think my dad is a great descendant of Rip Van Winkle.
the guy who slept
for 100 years underneath a tree. Wait a minute. Rip Van Winkle slept for how many years? We were looking at this. And then what's the difference between Rip Van Winkle and Rumpelstiltskin?
Rumpelstiltskin is the one that let the girl let her hair down, and he would climb it.
Rip Van Winkle slept for 20 years.
Oh, my
years.
God. You cracked
20
me
years.
Up.
Damn it.
That's Rapunzel, you douche.
Rapunzel.
You're an idiot.
Oh, my God.
Rip Van Winkle Rumpelstiltskin came what to town that? On a donkey or something.
Donkey?
A
Man,
donkey.
I had the Flotsam and Jetsam, and I was
on a roll.
You should just shut up.
Rumpelstiltskin is a German fairy tale.
But I'm going to figure out what Rumpel did. He didn't climb up anyone's hair. No.
What's the one that drew riding around without the head? That's
the Headless Horseman. That's Sleepy Hollow.
Right.
That's Ichabod Crane.
But yeah, more. That's what you've called me in the past, by the way. I don't know why. Why'd you call me that?
Ichabod Crane?
Yeah.
Because Ichabod Crane was Ichabod Crane was the scared Big Adam's apple guy who was, I think, attacked or frightened by the Headless Horseman. He was the puss.
Yeah,
in the equation,
well, I got news for you. You said that, and it was on the internet, and people have come to me and said, "Oh, you're the guy Corolla calls Ichabod Crane." It's like, what the?
Because he was a thin, cowardly goofball of a man, I believe. Now, Gary's got to look this up.
I was just looking up Rumpelstiltskin. You want that now?
Yeah.
A miller brags to the king that his daughter can spin straw into gold. She cannot actually perform this feat, so she employs a mannequin to do the work for her. On the third day, she has nothing to pay the mannequin, so she promises her first child. The girl is then married to the king, and the two soon have a baby. And the queen's sorrow at losing her baby makes him give her a chance to keep the child. He gives the queen 3 days to guess his name. A messenger discovers the man's name. When the queen correctly guesses the man's name, the mannequin becomes so angry that he stomps his foot into the ground and then pulls himself in half.
All right. Now look up Ricky Ticky Tavi.
Oh, no.
No, don't bother.
No.
But do this. He was a mongoose. Ricky Ticky was. All right. Now,
so the benign neglect.
Ichabod Crane was the spastic coward who was scared by the Headless Horseman, I do believe. I don't think, or he turned into the Headless Horseman, but I don't think he was. I think he was the puss.
There has to be some hero motif. No?
And, so my dad is Rip Van Winkle. There you go. He's a relative, a distant relative of Rip Van Winkle.
Ichabod Crane was a puss.
Thanks, Gary.
Cutting out the middleman here.
All right. There we go. Hey, you do have to find out what year Lizzie Borden did this, and did she just kill her mom and her dad and then, like, turn herself in, and how old was she and all that kind of stuff?
Turn of the century, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I know it was around then, but I'm not sure.
1892 were the murders.
Oh.
And was she, like, 15 or something at the time or whatever?
Oh, no, 32.
Oh, 32. I thought she was a young person.
Wasn't there more family members, a bunch of them? She can
look it up. We'll talk to her.
Father and stepmother were the two that she was tried for.
Stepmother, I get it.
Oh, but it looks like there may be, father and stepmother.
Okay. She get convicted? We're going to find out. Still in the joint?
Give me a minute.
Hey, Mike, 51, Indianapolis.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's going on, man?
Hey, I got a 16-year-old, that does not recognize the parent-child relationship. And I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. We're out of school for the summer. Mm-hmm. So we've been out for about a week and a half. And we, on a Saturday, my wife and I get awoken by him cursing a blue streak. I don't know if this is a clean show, but using the F word.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he's saying, fuck this, fuck that, you know. And I come down and I say, Jack, you can't do that. Well, why not? You do it. Yeah, I said, right. Well, you're a 16-year-old. I don't think that's something that's appropriate. Then it turns into a huge argument. And it literally 45 minutes into this, where I'm trying to be as calm as possible, finally I'm like, okay, just leave the room. So, you know, we can get on with our day. And then he refuses. And I don't want to get physical with him, but he refuses to leave the room. And my wife breaks down in tears because she's saying, just leave the room, just leave the room, just leave the room. And it affects his brothers. He's got three brothers, and they get involved. And then it just escalates from there. Now, we take him to him.
Yeah. I'd like a fucking class action lawsuit against all these people who've ruined my life. Like, just the stupid arguments over, just please, just do what I'm telling you to do, and let's move on. You know, like, well, fuck you, you're not the boss. It's like, I don't know, and he's 16, blah, blah, blah. I've seen 46-year-olds that have this. Like, how much of your life are you willing to invest over nothing? Like, can't we please pick the things that make sense to spend time and effort on, and then those that are just neither here nor there. Like, and it may be in a weird way, you know, what ultimate stupid is. Like, it's a form of ultimate stupidity, which is I will spend as much time as I can arguing about nothing that won't benefit me at all, and I'll do it until the cows come home. Like, it's a craziness that so many people have, and it doesn't serve them at all, and it'd be really great to break him of this. And
right,
and
well, when you talk about Ray all the time,
yes,
and I unfortunately I see my son in that position 30 years from now, it is so frustrating because common sense doesn't work with him.
Yeah,
you the way you approach it, and like you were talking about with Ray, you think like a rational human being. And he goes 180 degrees in the different direction. So it's an education, put it that way.
No, it's listen. But they don't live on a planet that possesses gravity. So it's like you can't really argue with them because they defy all look, if you're not going to at least agree to govern this discussion/argument by rules of sanity and gravity and things that make sense, then we can no longer, I might as well go yell at the mailbox on the corner. There is no, you have to, I think everyone has to agree when you're having a discussion or debate over anything, it has to live in a world that has reality in it. Because if you just want to go, hey, you're late again, and you go, fuck you, you're late. And you go, I've been here for 20 minutes. Well, fuck you. Napoleon's late. It's like we're not living in a world anymore. And one of the things these people are capable of doing is transcending all reality and just going into some weird land somewhere where they're able to make their arguments based on zero, and they can live there.
I don't know what, but so I don't know what is going on in the family. But first of all, this is a 16-year-old. There are things, you know, there's oppositional defiance disorder, there's conduct disorder, which.
Well, Bruce, that's the oppositional defiance. It keeps on in the back of my head. I'm thinking that the whole time.
Yes.
And we take him to a psychiatrist, and I have asked about that. And, you know, it's not confirmed. And we think he's somewhere on the autism scale. Or excuse me, autism spectrum, but he's unlike anybody I've ever met. There's so many facets of his. I love him, but there's so many facets of his stupidity. I'm sorry.
No, you know, I get it. I deal with these people all fucking day long, and it's just.
But they're not your son, you know.
They're close. The point is, yeah. it's horrible because you're going to watch them ruin their lives because they spend so much energy ruining their own lives. And I get it. My daughter's got a lot of this in her. She's a good kid, but right. She'll argue over anything all day, any day of the week about anything. And at a certain point, you become a liar, which is the part. The part that kind of drives me nuts is when your son does his recounting of what happened, right. And his recounting of what happened is he was silently playing chess with his friend via Skype from the Netherlands, and then you came down and started screaming, "Shut up." Yeah. That's his version of what happened.
Right.
Except for the real version of what happened is he was yelling "fuck you" as loud as he can, and you came downstairs and told him to shut up. Their version, and I don't know if they believe this. I deal with this a lot. Like, do you believe this version, or are you just telling me this version? And then if you're just telling me this version, do you think I believe it? Because I'm the one who came down the stairs.
Right. But especially at 16, if this kid has some sort of autism spectrum disorder, I mean, to engage him and get locked in with him and escalate. And you know, I'm sure you've been to a family therapy as well as a psychiatrist. I don't know if the psychiatrist started meds. I don't like the meds thing as a first choice, and you know, and he's, I'm sure they've drug tested him too, because it's hard to know at that age. Are they depressed and acting out, or is it some underlying psychiatric disorder?
But Mike, the number one thing is, and I've come to grips with this, is you are the adult and you're the sane person in this combo, and the main thing you can't do is engage and dance. You spent far too much time in the living room engaging and dancing with a person who does not want to resolve the problem. He wants to engage and dance. That's what I've realized. These people want to engage and dance. You think we're going to solve this problem. They have little to no interest in solving the problem. They have an interest in engaging and dancing. And you have to not be a willing partner.
Right.
You have to simply say whatever it is you have to say, and then you walk away. And if they don't comply, then the weight of law starts coming down on them. Go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, Adam, I want to tell you about a dual solution oral rinse, mouthwash called Smart Mouth.
Smart Mouth.
Which I have used.
Mm-hmm.
Brushing your teeth 3 times a day is not enough because there is a bacterial origin for some bad breath, much of bad breath. So this is the only activated mouthwash clinically proven to instantly eliminate bad breath and prevent it from coming back for up to 12 hours. And it involves zinc ion technology, which binds to bacteria, causing it to stop producing sulfur, which is a noxious substance in your mouth that you don't want.
Oh, when you do that, those old fart bombs used to be just little sulfur containers.
And lighting those, I'm sure you're...
You don't even have to light them. Just open the little sulfur container blow on it.
Nothing can ruin an intimate moment as quick as bad breath, stinky breath. Doesn't matter if you work out all day, drive a Lambo. If your mouth smells like wet garbage, you're in trouble. Foul breath can ruin social situations. It can ruin patient-doctor interactions and sabotage other relationships and career prospects. So visit smartmouth.com, or you can find it also at Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, or wherever you shop.
Smart Mouth.
Great stuff.
All right, Bruce. Feeling good?
Yeah.
All right. 24-Hour War, available on Amazon Prime. Go watch it. Give it a nice review. We love reading reviews.
Best documentary I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm not paid for saying that.
I got to say, I'm pretty proud of it. Yeah. I was, when I did the Newman doc, I poured so much of my soul into the Newman doc that I really didn't expect a 24-Hour War to be any better than the Newman doc, but I think people like it a smidge better, maybe 10%.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's the next step up. But they're both great. But I like the history aspect. I mean, it was just really nicely laid out.
Thank you.
From Ferrari family and the Ford story.
Yeah, appreciate
World
that.
World War II.
Love it all. So check that out tomorrow at the Irvine Improv. Check that out. Dennis Prager up on stage. No Safe Spaces. Go there, nosafespaces.com, and help us reach our goal. It's a good cause. And Dr. Spaz, what do you got?
Weekly Infusion, our podcast, Dr. Drew and I.
Mm-hmm.
It is compelling listening.
So, until next time, Adam Kroll for Dr. Spaz saying, mahalo.